we are back once again 373 times. It's the Parish of the Patriots. Right off the bat, I got to tell you, I'm recording this on the Monday morning before the show airs tomorrow. So I usually record over the weekend. I was out of town. I was out of pocket. All kinds of stuff going on. It's crazy. So I didn't get a chance to go by and check the donation box. So if you put something in there and you thought I should have got it this week, it's probably there. I ran out of time. You know, I Monday is like my absolute outside timeline that I like to get a show done. That way, Sven, if I did it on Tuesday morning, Sven's running around trying to get it put together. And while he's doing his other stuff for Radio Albion, because, you know, it's not like this is the only show on Radio Albion. Thank goodness. So, it's probably in there and I'll probably see it when I check it before recording the next show. So, and you know, with that having been said, if you do get something out of the show, I do have a P.O. box. You can look there in the description page for each show, and there's a P.O. box. That's what I got. Not Bitcoin, not any of the other Bitcoin addresses that you might see on Radio Albion. Those are Sven's. Those do not in any way, shape, form belong to yours truly. So, and anyway, those of you that, as always, those of you that do take the time to drop something in the mail, I really do appreciate it. And again, it's not like I just couldn't be bothered to go by and check it. I literally did not have the time. And plus, and all this, we had thunderstorms rolling through yesterday evening. It's springtime in Texas, which means for us, that means thunderstorms. It doesn't mean nice, pleasant, occasional rains. We have thunderstorm season. And then, of course, like that, it'll be summer. Which summer in Texas means the temperature of the surface of the sun. That seems to last for, I don't know, half the year. Then fall comes around, which seems, always feels like it lasts about 2 weeks. And then winter, which feels like it lasts 2 months. So, yeah, we have seasons here. They're not always real. They're not always real pleasant. But nevertheless, we are in thunderstorm season, and we had that going on as well. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's like I say, it's not like I couldn't be bothered. I just didn't have the time. So, anyway, we got to get this show on the road. As always, expect a wide range of topics. I don't even know exactly what I'm going to talk about before this show is done. As always, we'll have some regular things observing or that we observe and some Christian specific stuff. And I thought we'd kind of start off with a combination of the two. Did y'all see the story here? I believe it was last week where they said it came out that certain, I guess, quote unquote, prominent Christian pastors were called in for this meeting to brief them about coming revelation, the revelation, not that revelation necessarily, though it may not be totally unrelated, revelation from the government concerning aliens. Have you noticed on the alien agenda, they've quit saying specifically space aliens? You know, before they would always say space aliens. And as the government has gone from, you know, it's a weather balloon, it's this or that, to no, they're actually pushing the alien thing. They've also, there's been a noticeable shift. They've gone from talking about space aliens, and now they just say aliens. And they're even subtly saying, you know, possibly interdimensional beings. So this is interesting. This shift is interesting to me because it was always space aliens, like my entire life. Space. But now there's a quiet shift as the government has taken up promoting the alien agenda. And it's just aliens and even some subtle talk here and there of possibly beings from another dimension. Why can't they come from space? We got all the space. During that ridiculous Artemis mission that they had here a little while back, I'm surprised they didn't have alien going by the outside or something. Don't even get me started on that nonsense. People sitting around, and then they push the little capsule out of the back of an airplane so it can land in the ocean. They can pick them up. I don't know, you know, who believes this stuff? But anyway, back to
space
or not space aliens. The shift to not being space aliens, possible interdimensional beings. But what does that mean? I find that interesting. Interdimensional, possible interdimensional beings. Well, you know, that kind of makes sense. I mean, you know, when I laugh and kind of make fun of these narratives like this about this, it's not that I'm saying the beings don't exist. I'm saying they're just kind of, we're getting closer, I guess. Best I can read, we're getting closer to the leaders of the government openly admitting that they're conversing with demons. I mean, you know, I said a long time ago, you'll have somebody who is a complete non-believer. You know, complete, boy, don't believe any of this God nonsense. Oh, this is all just fairy tales. But if instead of the context of, you know, God, angels, demons, Satan, if you shifted it and talked about interdimensional beings that possibly exist outside of time, they would be like, oh my gosh, that's an amazing concept. And it's like, we're talking literally about the same thing. It's all in framing. You know, you talk about God and angels and people, automatically they get this picture of their grandma's cute little figurines with the cute angel with wings. But what we're really talking about is existences beyond this realm. But anyway, getting back to this topic, they supposedly, and I don't, there's kind of been quasi verification, it's kind of been a little muddied, but supposedly they called in a number of Christian pastors to warn them, because they said once they get around to revealing, you know, that these aliens are here and whatnot, and it's going to shake the faith. It's your congregations. They said, supposedly they told these pastors that they needed to start preparing their congregations for these revelations, because it was going to shake their faith to the core. And again, it's the internet. You can read all sorts of things. But one of the things out there, we're just going to go ahead and talk about it because we don't know. And so why not? We don't know any. You know, there's a lot of things we don't know. We have to go with what we got sometimes for the sake of discussion. But one of the things that was kind of floated out there is, according to the aliens, they created mankind. In fact, they said they created Jesus Christ. They wrote the Bible. Now see, the devil's a liar and a murderer. You want to pay attention. They wrote the Bible. See, this plays on people's ignorance. If you ask the probably just any random Christian believer in America who wrote the Bible, and they would probably tell you, God wrote the Bible. No, men wrote the Bible. I mean, we literally, much of the New Testament consists of letters, and it says who's writing the letter, who's dictating the letter, and who the letter goes to. It's spelled out plainly. You can walk into random Protestant denominations here in America and ask somebody, who wrote the Bible? God wrote the Bible. When it's clearly written by men. So I find that interesting. These just little clues, little tidbits that I look for. Well, they claim the aliens wrote the Bible. Well, that's a lie from the beginning, because we know who wrote the Bible. I mean, it's pretty... You know, it's pretty clearly spelled out in many instances. I don't understand why anyone would think that at some point God sat down with a pen and wrote whichever book of the Bible. It's not the case. But the aliens wrote the Bible. In fact, the aliens invented Jesus. And you need to tell these pastors, get prepared, because once these revelations come out, it's going to be a crisis of faith. I think it says something about these pastors' congregations and the work they are doing in leading these congregations, if that is the case. It reminds me of a story that when Jimmy Carter came in, it was supposedly when I was a little kid when that election was happening. So obviously I don't remember, but supposedly one of the things Jimmy Carter ran on back in the 70s was he was interested in this UFO. Of course, back then it was more specifically about space aliens. And one of the things Jimmy Carter said, boy, when I get in the White House, when Jimmy Carter got in the White House, he was going to, you know, make public these space alien records, you know, get to the truth of the space aliens. And supposedly he got elected and he was going to do that. And the CIA or whatnot called him in. And they said that when he came out, he was crying. He was in tears because what they informed him about the space aliens, he was supposedly a fairly devout man. And again, these are stories they tell us, mind you. I'm not saying this is true, but this is the story. Because of his devout Christian faith, he went in, and what they explained to him about the aliens, he came out in tears because his whole faith had basically just been shut upon. So now they call these Christian pastors in. You're going to have to start getting your congregations ready because the alien revelations are coming. Now, a few things I found interesting about. Needless to say, they called these quote unquote prominent Christian people, pastors and whatnot, in for this briefing. Just for the record, to make it 100% clear, no, I did not get an invitation. I don't know whether. At first, I thought maybe I should be offended about that. I'm just not prominent enough. But then I thought that even if I was, they'd be like, don't bother with that guy. You know, they didn't pick these guys at random. Most of these guys I've never heard of. Of course, it's not like I really keep up with that thing, these things like that. But anyway, no invite for yours truly, just for the record, so you don't think I was at the alien conference. And I'm just plain dumb. It is not an act. I'm quite dumb. No, a few interesting things about this. For starters, you know, these pastors themselves, they get called in. You notice there's no Orthodox leaders here, or Catholic, as far as I understand, either. I thought that little tidbit was interesting, that they didn't invite them. These Protestant, various Protestant pastors. What does that tell you? It tells you, well, they'll be the most gullible to spread and buy into this nonsense. And you notice how they're teasing this. It's like a movie coming out, and they start teasing it 6 months before its release date. You know, this is going to be the big show, you know, this big movie, the latest Steven Spielberg movie or something like that. You know, this is going to be, they start teasing it. They're building up anticipation. I view stories like this quite a bit in that context. They're teasing this. They're trying to build up some hype for it. You know, they did some alien reveal stuff last week, you know, but it was just, my understanding of it is, it was just more of, you know, here's some military footage where they're shooting a Sidewinder missile at an object and nothing happens. Never mind that they were shooting missiles at quite a few Iranian things and nothing happened, but, space aliens for sure. Nothing happened. So they're teasing this. They're promoting it for the big drop, you know, for the big reveal. Now, just for the record, concerning my own faith, and hopefully yours too, I have zero concerns that my faith is going to be shaken when they get around to, if they get around to playing this card, which it's kind of pointing that at some point they will. I don't think it's going to be super soon, but some point they're going to roll out this card. But sadly, a lot of people's faith will, and we'll kind of circle. We'll circle back around to that here in just a minute. Now, as I said earlier, it's kind of interesting, too, because they're, in a sense, they're warming up for not a, like a really a alien revelation as an admission that they have been in communion with demons or demonic entities. And, you know, that may sound kind of crazy, but, you know, it's basically, if you look at it, That's kind of what these things are pointing to. And then that leads to, you can get off into other questions, what they're doing with the Hadron the Collider and all of that. And, you know, people say they're opening portals. They're trying to open portals to bring these entities in. But if you think of things biblically, we know that Satan and his followers were cast down into the temporal realm. They were like thrown in jail here. They temporarily banished into the temporal realm. So they would need to open a portal to get here. Maybe they're trying to open portals, trying to get out. You know, it's kind of the opposite. But I'm not trying to get way out there with this. But it is just interesting that they're really planting the seeds about this alien thing, and it's going to shake people's faith up, and they're just going to, it's going to turn their whole view upside down. The aliens created Jesus, wrote the Bible. I'm not sure where that leaves the world's other religions. Kind of weird. It would only be pointed towards Christianity. Now, there are other narratives floating around this that they created all the world's religions. It's all the same. I make light of it because, again, I have zero concerns that they're going to come out with what they're going to come out with. I'm going to be sitting here doing a show going, oh, my gosh, we were all wrong all along. It was the aliens this whole time. Oh, and another one of the narratives that I heard floating around out here with this is because you hear these things and you never get a specific who's saying it, you know, that you could. It's just, oh, government officials are saying, and some of the things they're saying, and we don't know how accurate that is, or if it's just all made, well, it's all made up, but anyway, one of the other things was that the aliens created us, and the whole point of the creation, here's your answer, why are we here? That's mankind's eternal answer. Why are we here? What's the purpose of this life? The aliens created us to be slaves for the aliens. I find this funny. Because they present these aliens as, you know, technologically advanced, far superior than we are. That's why they're so scary, because they're so far superior. They have such advanced technology, other world capabilities we can only imagine. That's been the narrative steady. They've got technology that defies gravity. They've got the aliens are capable of the forms of travel and things like this that we can't even begin to grasp or imagine. But they need human slaves? How does that make sense? They have all of this advanced capability, but you know, the one thing they're really lacking is manual labor. They need people to be their slaves. Does this make any sort of sense? Because it doesn't, because it's all a lie. As I said, I'm not worried concerning my own faith, and hopefully you aren't either. But that begs the question, who should be worried? Who is this geared towards? As I said at the beginning of this discussion, you notice there are no Orthodox Christian leaders. They use these blanket terms. These call together these prominent Christian leaders, prominent Christian pastors, whom I personally never heard of, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. And they're all Protestant. I think that's one interesting thing. They didn't call in any Orthodox leaders. Like, they don't count. And again, for that matter, as far as I can tell, there was no Catholic leadership involved in this either. So who is this aimed at? And who is it going to rock their faith? Who is this pointed at? And obviously, by the leaders they called in, this is our answer. And I was thinking about how shaky the faith is for these congregations. You know, the messaging. And like I said at the beginning of the discussion, too, this says a lot about their leadership, you know, these pastors and how they're leading and informing and teaching their congregations. I find one of the fundamental, I think, errors and issues with these, a lot of these Protestant teachings on Christianity is, you know, they have dumbed it down. They've dumbed the faith down. They have, they've made it this overly simplistic, how do I want to say, this simplistic thing. And, you know, all you have to do is say these words and you're saved. You know, it's a business model. You know, get more people in. The parishioners are, they're your customers, and you need them to put money in and donate money. So you got to tell them what they want to hear. And the fundamental spot they begin from is if you say these words that you accept Jesus Christ, then you are saved. End of story. This leads to people having a faith that's weak enough that you know, they can also be presented with, well, actually, we were wrong all along, and you were created by aliens to be a slave race, and actually, they even invented Jesus Christ for their own nefarious purposes. So, sorry about that, guys. Kind of like that whole "We Stand with Israel" thing. It's we might have been wrong. No, they probably wouldn't. The aliens would probably say that was the one thing you absolutely got right. You absolutely need to stand. Absolutely need to stand with Israel. But Jesus said to be careful, you know, to be wary, because you need to make sure you enter, you know, through the narrow gate. He says it's a narrow gate. He said many will try to enter, but few will be able to. And this is where a lot of these churches, you know, I think they have failed, because it's a narrow gate. You have to struggle and strive and put in the effort to get through that narrow gate. But when they watered things down to the point of it's a word spell, if you cast this word spell on God, then he's got to let you in no matter what you do. That's the type of faith that's easily shaken. A lifetime of following and learning and coming to know and understand the Lord is not going to be shaken by some government pronouncement that God is actually aliens and you were tricked. It was a hoax all along. A substantial life of going through the process of learning and understanding and coming to know the Lord. It's like someone showed up and told you that someone you've known all your life, you know, some complete stranger walks up and says, actually, I'm him. And you would be like, no, I know him. What are you talking about? You're not him. That should be our reaction to this sort of nonsense. Now, moving on from this, just something interesting I came across in the book of John, which is where my current New Testament Bible study is. We're looking at John chapter 7. And we look at verses 40, I think, through around 43. Jesus is going around doing his thing. And it says, many of the people, therefore, when they heard this saying, said, a truth, this is the prophet. Others said, this is the Christ. But some said, shall Christ come out of Galilee? Hath not the scriptures said that Christ cometh of the seed of David, and out of the town of Bethlehem where David was. So there was a division among the people because of him. And some of them, we'll go ahead and do verse 44, and some of them would have taken him, but no man laid hands on him. And what I found interesting of this same dynamic, you know, is he a prophet? Is he a Christ? You have a three-way dynamic among the people here. One saying he's a prophet, one saying he's the Christ, and the other wants to kill him. And I was thinking, you know, we still have that same dynamic today. You know, according to Islam, they view Christ, they view Jesus as a great prophet, second to Muhammad. When, of course, Christian believers, we believe he's the Christ, the Son of God. And then you have number three that want to take him and kill him, because just bound and determined, and we know who that is. So You have Islam, which views Jesus still as a prophet. You have Christianity, which views him as Christ, the Son of God. And you have Judaism, which wants to take him and kill him even today. And you have that same dynamic. I just thought it was interesting, that you still, in all these years later, and you have that same dynamic. You have that same dynamic at work. Also, here is another important lesson to keep in mind, and that is what I say, you don't know what you don't know. You know, you have the people right here, they got Jesus, and he's saying these amazing things and doing these amazing things, and you know, they're like, well, the scriptures say he didn't come from Galilee, he comes from Bethlehem, so he can't be the Christ. They're bound and determined because they know where he's from. It's written he originates from Bethlehem. This guy's from Galilee, so he can't be it. So again, the problem is you don't know what you don't know. And what they didn't know is he was born where we all know. And I mean, you know, in a manger in Bethlehem. You see, they took, he comes out of Bethlehem as if that he lives his entire life from Bethlehem. No, he was born. He came from Bethlehem. He was born in Bethlehem. You don't know what you don't know. You got to be careful. You know, you get your narrow preconceptions, your narrow interpretation set in your head, and you don't know what you don't know. And these people, meaning well, but they're like, he can't be the Christ. Reasoning, because the scripture says he has to come from Bethlehem. This guy comes from Galilee. He can't be the Christ. That you don't know what you don't know. They didn't know he was born where? In Bethlehem, the scriptures are fulfilled. I just, again, the dynamic, though, you got one group saying he's surely a great prophet. You know, the other group saying he's the Christ. You got the other group that wants to seize him and kill him. Same dynamic going on today. You know, and in that, you know, and in that same vein, you know, Christian believers are so fragmented. You know, I was, once again, one of my triggers just the other day. I'm trucking down the road and I go by a church, and there they got scrolling across their sign, standing with Israel. And it I know I've complained about this before. It really does bother me. I'm triggered. It really does bother me because I always think when I see that, I think how many people go to this church actually seeking the Lord, and there they are advertising on the front. I mean, to me, they might as well say standing with Satan. Now, I'm not trying to demonize Israel and the Jews here, but I mean, it's so diametrically opposed. Again, what did we just say? We have that same dynamic. One group says he's a prophet. One group says he's Christ. The other group wants to kill him. Now, if you said which two groups are going to be closer together in their view, the normal person would say the group that thinks he's a prophet and the group that thinks he's the Christ. They're going to be the closest. The one that's the outlier is the one that wants to seize him and kill him. You have the same dynamic at work, and yet you don't have the closer logical commonality, do you? You've got the ones that say he's the Christ, the Son of God, talking about their shared values with the group that wants to seize and kill him. And they got their signs going, standing with Israel. It upsets me because there's people there. I always say there's people there. You sit there and go, kind of scoff and say, what a bunch of idiots. But there's people that show up to those churches. They show up to those and take their time out of their Sunday to go to this church because they want to learn about God. They want to learn about, they want to get some faith. They want to make sense of this world. They want to fulfill a purpose in the Lord. And you know, offhand right there with the sign, they're not getting it. I don't know what other stuff they're teaching. Maybe they're teaching some good self-help stuff. But if they fundamentally, if the leadership of that church actually believes that's the correct viewpoint, they got no chance. None. Zero. Zilch. Not. I don't care if their preacher, their pastor has a PhD in theology. If he thinks standing with Israel makes some sort of biblical sense, the congregation are victims here. They got no chance. Zero. You know, the commonality with that third group, the one that wants to seize him and kill him. That's, I always wonder where they justify, you know, standing with Israel. And it's another one of these, you pay attention to the phraseology. It's what I like to call word spells. It's marketing. Standing with them where? You know, what do you mean standing with them? Commonality with them? What part of Israel do you support? Mass slaughter? You know, when they bomb Christian churches in Lebanon, are you standing with them on that? Mass slaughtering Palestinians, genociding them, is that what you're... And here's the problem. You've got to be careful. Because if you're one of these people, the I Stand With Israel church, we're going to say in this example, you're taking that guilt on. Your words matter. Look, we are made in the image of God. God spoke this world that we live in and life into existence. The word was from the beginning. The word is with him. This tells us that our words have power. You know, obviously we don't have the same level of powers that the Lord, but our words have power. We should not take them lightly. Bear with me here. If you're one of these churches doing the I Stand With Israel thing, and you know what they're doing, you can't not know what they're doing. Images are all over the internet. They bomb Christian churches. Yes, they're bombing the Muslims too. They're bombing Christian churches. hospitals, women, children. I sometimes wish these people, these Stand With Israel people, could somehow just force them to walk through these areas to smell the stench of death that permeates everywhere. The desolation, the killing. So it's not a, see, you justify, you can live with it if it's an abstract idea. It's not real. It's a video game. It's a movie. You know, we watch, we live our whole lives inundated with various forms of video entertainment, TV, movies, and we know when we see them that they're fiction, but yet we internalize them the same way. So when we hear about or see images of people being slaughtered, blown up buildings, destroyed churches, destroyed hospitals, we see it, and even though consciously we say, oh, this has happened, our brain processes it in exactly the same way as any other video format. So at the end of the day, it's not quite real. It's not real like if you're there. You can look at the news footage of, you know, the big tornado went through this neighborhood and blew up people's houses and go, wow, that's bad. It's a whole different deal than if you're actually there walking around digging through rubble trying to find deceased individuals. It's not real. It's real when you're there. When it's this abstract concept of something happened to some other people over there that, you know, yeah, that's sad, but, you know, whatever. You want to be careful what you say. Guard your words. Jesus told us over and over, the tongue, the dangers of the tongue. Much sin begins with the tongue. Why? You speak it into existence. You're speaking, you can speak your own guilt into existence. Israel mass slaughtering people, including Christian people. I'm not minimizing the death of these other people. You know, I'm not trying to say I only care about the Christian people being killed. But for the sake of this point, I want to focus on that. They're killing Christian people, bombing churches, killing Christian people, desecrating Christian symbols. When you saw that video, and we talked about it on a show, recent show, you know, of the Israeli soldier taking a sledgehammer to the statue of Jesus, they're group number three we just read about in the book of John. You see, they can't get to him, but they still have that desire. While they claim he's a fake and a fraud and not real, it's funny because they're still trying to get to him and kill him, aren't they? The same people that tell you, oh, that was fake. He didn't rise from the dead. I saw a video of some rabbi mocking our faith and our Savior and going, some kind of God if we were able to kill him. Oh, but if you killed him and he didn't raise from the dead, rabbi, how come y'all are still trying to get to him? Oh, some IDF soldier out there taking a sledgehammer to Jesus because they can't get to the real one. They're still trying to kill him. They're still trying to seize him. Still have the same mentality. They desecrate Christian symbols. They are at war with the faith. They're also at war with the ones that view him as a prophet. And you've got people in the Christian group standing with the destroyers. We stand with. Where's the commonality? What do you got in common? Why are you standing with them where? Blowing up Christian churches, mass slaughtering people, genociding people, desecrating Christian symbols. And here's the thing. They're doing that. The Israelis are doing that. They're guilty of that. And they know that. And they don't care. Then that's, you know, okay. Well enough, I guess. I mean, they don't care. They know what they're doing. They're proud of it. They are filming themselves doing it and posting it on the internet so you can see it, causing no small problem public relations-wise for the Israeli government, but nevertheless, they do it because they're proud to be doing it. The Israeli government, oh, this is a breach of our protocol, and they're just upset about it because it makes them look bad. It shows the truth, but it tells you about their mindset. They're guilty of that. They're the ones doing it. And again, they don't care. Now, enter in your word spell. Standing with Israel. How do you define that? You support it. What you're essentially saying is, you're supporting it. You agree with it. Here's the danger. I'm trying to take my time spelling this out because it's that grave. It's that important. What you were saying, in a sense, essentially, at its fundamental core, is that you support. So by these words that you're speaking, standing with Israel, and you know what they're doing. What you were doing is now you are taking some of that guilt on yourself. You're saying that if you're standing with Israel, you're essentially saying, give me the sledgehammer. I'll smash the Jesus statue myself. And it's the symbology that matters. No, the statue itself doesn't actually obviously contain Jesus. You're not hurting Jesus, but they're demonstrating that they still have that desire. They still want to get to him. They still want to kill him. As it reminds me of that clip of Sarah Silverman saying, "We're glad, yeah, the Jews did kill Jesus. I'm glad we did. I wish we could kill him again." A brief moment of honesty, standing with these people. You take a situation to where they're doing this to Christian believers and others, but as I said, for the purpose of this discussion, I want to focus on the Christian aspect. They're doing this to Christian believers in Palestine and Lebanon. And when, you know, they're guilty of that, you're not, but your words have power. So when you have a Christian church stand up and say, we stand with these guys, what you're essentially doing now, and this is a part of it. It's not just about keep supporting Israel so they'll keep sending money. Remember, it's a spiritual battle at the end of the day. When you get to its fundamental core, what you're seeing playing out in the world has a spiritual element. It is a seed of a spiritual conflict. What they're doing is they are accepting some of the guilt. No, they're not the ones. These Christian churches aren't the ones out there killing Christian believers in Lebanon and Palestine. But what they are doing is saying, we're with them. We're with the destroyers. You're speaking your guilt into existence. Does that make sense? You're speaking your guilt into existence, saying, I may not be killing these people, but I sure as hell support the ones who are. You're one half step away from saying, if you could give me a rifle and a ticket and a sledgehammer, send me over there and I'll kill these people too. You're speaking yourself into a position of guilt where there was none. If you just look, your words have power. This is why we have to be careful as believers. Don't ever be afraid, and we all struggle with it, yours truly for sure. We should never be afraid to say, I don't know. There's been times that people have asked me a Christian question, and you know, I wasn't 100% sure, and I try to give my opinion, and I look back and I think I should have just answered at that time, I don't know. Never be afraid to say, I don't know, because there's nothing wrong with that. Say, I don't know. We all want to be an expert. We want to act like we know exactly on every single, you bring it to me, I got an answer for you. But we can't know everything. You know, we might know some things. But we as believers should never be afraid to say, I don't know. Why? Because once you start speaking about something, you're putting power to it from your words. Again, you're made in the image of God. God spoke things into existence. If you're made in his image, that means your words have power to a certain extent. What are you using those words for? You didn't have any guilt. I, for instance, I have no guilt concerning what Israel is doing to Christian believers in that area. None. But if I were to come out and say, I support what they're doing, now all of a sudden I do share in that guilt. I do share, you would share in that spiritual guilt because you have now spoken your way where there was no connection. You didn't have any culpability. You spoke it into existence by saying, yes, I do. Imagine if you were sitting in a courtroom and a guy is, a criminal is up here on trial and he gets sentenced and he's going to do 20 years in prison. But before they walk him out, they look at everyone in the audience and say, hey, does anyone else want to go to prison with this guy? And you got five people in the back, throw their hands up. Yeah, me too. Send me to prison. I want to go. You'd be like, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you do that? Exactly. Why would you do that? Why would you go? Why would you set yourself up for that? It kind of, I was sitting here being reminded there was that thing. It's been a couple of weeks ago now, and y'all probably heard about it where that idiot Pete Hegseth was leading a prayer, you know, at the Pentagon. And it wound up, it was just some lines from Pulp Fiction. You know, but he was acting like it was out of the Bible. And people were, of course, mocking and making fun of it because how stupid it is. This guy thinks this is from the Bible and it's from a movie. And I'm sitting there going, is it though? Is it stupidity or are they just openly mocking our faith at this point? Because I'm not sure. I mean, yeah, he's a moron for sure. But more and more, you just see this open mockery of the faith. It's just, like I say, it is fundamental core, the conflict all over the world. It's a spiritual battle. The whole purpose, as we go through, one of the elements, I'll get spit out here in a minute. One of the elements of this experience in life is it's constantly a culling, as it were, a culling of who gets in the kingdom of God. This goes back to remembering what I was talking about earlier, that Jesus is warning that be careful because narrow is the way. You got to go through the narrow gate. It's difficult. Many will try to enter and not be able to. We're going through a constant process, and there's different levels to it. No matter what our circumstances is, though, we're going through a culling, a sifting, refining. You start, if you ever have done this, I melted many years ago. I had a little deal and I could melt lead to make bullets, you know, and you could melt my own lead, and you have this form and you pour the lead in and make the bullets. Well, you would melt this. You have lead, and you heat it, and the lead melts. But what you have is you have all these impurities. You just this crud would float up to the top. You have to skim that off. Silver does the same thing. Gold, same thing. So when they talk about refining gold and silver, this is what they're talking about. If you've never done it, it may be hard to visualize. But you melt the metal, and all these impurities come out and come to the top. That's what happens. That's what we're going through constantly. And the circumstances vary. If you live in really prosperous times, the refining process for your faith and who's headed into that narrow gate and who isn't is things are real easy. Do you really need God or do you just want to indulge and just fully immerse yourself in the world's pleasure? That's the temptation. That's part of the culling process. In very difficult times, are you going to abandon your faith? Are you going to hold to your principles in the Lord? Or are you going to do something sketchy? There's all sorts of things. There are people that are fair weather Christians, so to speak. They have faith as long as everything's good. Praise be the Lord. My bank account looks really nice. But when times get hard and times get rough, then all of a sudden, well, where is God at? All circumstances, we're constantly, everything works as a part of the refining, the sifting, separating wheat from chaff, however you want to think of it. We're constantly going through this process. We're being separated into the narrow gate. Many will try, but few will be able to. Jesus said it himself. If you fall for the alien hoax, you didn't make it. It's sad. these preachers, these teachers in these churches, it's their job to try to keep people heading into the narrow gate. And, but you wind up with blind people leading blind people. They both fall, as it's written, you know, they both fall into a ditch. We have all of these different circumstances, and all of them work to try our faith in a different manner, from a different angle. This is, a part of this. Isn't God being mean to you? This isn't, you know, Satan has just got all this power. Where's the Lord? We're struggling against the devil, and he has all of this power. It all works through this process. Where's your faith go? How do you react? Are you going to abandon the faith? Because if you're going to abandon the faith here, you got no chance in the kingdom of God of being any use. A lot of, you know, people always try to imagine, it's real easy as believers to fall in this imagination that, you know, God wants to require some grand thing from us. You know, and I believe that in most instances, it's just a matter of not giving up. You know, it's just that simple. You know, if things get really good, you don't give up. You don't forget about God. You're cautious of the pleasures of the world. Things get really hard, you don't give up. When you pray and your prayers don't come true, you know, don't happen, God doesn't fulfill them, and you don't see a way out of your current predicament, and you still don't give up. Not some grand thing, not some grand accomplishment. Just don't give up. That's just, I would say, you know, the Lord is more faithful than we have faith, no matter how great you think your faith may be. Or another way to put it, as much as you may think you love the Lord, he loves you more. He has more concern for you. As much as you think you want to, if you want to enter the kingdom of God, in other words, how do I want to put this? As long as you're trying to seek him out, there's not a point to where you're still seeking him, but he's looking at you going, and I've had enough of you. You know, if you still have the determination through it all, no matter what, that you're still seeking him, there's not a point where he gives up before you do. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Because you can get discouraged with your faith and whatnot. And look, the devil will try to tell you, why are you bothering? After all this, you think the Lord wants to have anything to do with it? I don't think so. But look, as long as you're still trying, he's still there. You don't have more determination than he does. Don't give up. It's fundamental. Don't give up. That's really, you're not having to necessarily go out and accomplish some grand thing that's going to be written about in the history books. Just don't give up. Now, obviously, one of the trials we're facing is these economic times, you know, economic hardships. So this is the latest trial. You know, things, people are already tight on money. And I think things are going to get worse, you know. And I've seen people having the discussion, you know, the question of, is it intentional? You know, is this a controlled demolition to reach the 2030 agenda? I don't know. You know, because you really, it's touch and go. I had jotted down at one point the thought crossed my mind, controlled demolition? Or are we just dealing with rich, out of touch, senile assholes that in reality aren't very smart? Our politicians or middle management, never forget that. They're placed in office not because of their brilliance, because of their pliability, their compliance. Their job is to be the customer service reps for the ones who actually run the country, who actually own the country. That's their job. They're not highly intelligent. They do make certain decisions, but when they get a dictate and say, this is what you're going to do, that's what they do. They comply. But they still hold a certain amount of level where they have to make decisions. And I look at all of these politicians, and none of them, they don't seem very smart to me, in my humble opinion. We're not dealing with a huge amount of intelligence. Your Secretary of Defense thought Pulp Fiction was an actual thing. You know, some movie script was a part of the Bible. And he goes out here and tries to make a big sale out of Christian faith. Or again, they're just mocking our faith. Could be the other way. I don't know. I will say this. We got to make our own best decisions. Take care of yourself. If you're thinking that if your plan is basically at the end of the day, the government will figure something out. That's not much of a plan. I wouldn't be putting my faith in these people. You need to figure out a way to take care of your own family, your own self. Make your decisions. Take control of yourself. This is empowering. I hate it when people get a helpless mindset. You know, somebody needs to do something. Somebody else needs to do. Somebody has got to rise up. Somebody has got to. You see, that surrenders any power you have. That makes you, that sets you into, or perhaps it's just reflective of a helpless mindset, a victimized mindset. There's nothing you can do. Somebody needs to do something. When you take control of your own decisions, you know, sure, look, you can't do anything about what the government, what Trump people or whatever the government is going to decide concerning the Strait of Hormuz, you know, the conflict with Iran, for instance, or the interest rates or you know, government budget. You don't have any control over that. This is true. The price of gas, you don't have any control. Price of fuel, you don't have any control over that. So what should you do? You focus on what you do have control over. Your own decision making. Okay, what can I do? You know the economic realities of today. And if you look forward and say, okay, in 2 or 3 months, is things going to be better? If you think they are, what are you basing that on? Is it something real or is it just you hope? Or you think maybe the government will figure things out? Assuming they want to fix it anyway, which there's really no indications that they do. So what can you do? Now, I'm not here to give you the answers to that because your life, your circumstances are different than mine and different from anyone else that's listening. You have got to look and to start making your own decisions. Quit waiting for somebody else. Make the decisions that you can affect in your life. What do I mean by that? Let's be specific. What do you need to do with your budget? Is there a way you can do something as far as income? Again, I'm not giving you specifics because I don't have them. I don't know your circumstances. I don't know where you live. I don't know what kind of people live around you. If you start focusing on the things you have control over, you can abandon this victimized mindset, the defeatist mindset. What are they going to do to me next? No, focus on, okay, what do I need to do next? What decision do I need to make? Where do I need to put my money? Where do I need to, you know, what do I need to do? And Sven and I did a show this past Friday on our daily nationalist show that we usually do on Fridays. And the story we were covering was, you know, they're in Britain, they still think it's 2020 and they're doing the whole, you know, white privilege, you know, agenda. Like in the story we were doing is in Wales, you know, they have these guidelines for preschoolers to report them for a hate crime. Sort of nonsense. And I kept coming back to the point of, okay, you know this, so why are you sending your kids there? You know, I mean, instead of sitting back, if you were living there, instead of sitting back and going, oh my gosh, it's so crazy, they're doing this to my kids, don't send your kids there. Find another way. See if your grandparents can watch them. See, you know, I mean, come on. Where are the churches? The churches should have a daycare set up so you don't have to do that. Once you get proactive, once you start making the decisions you can make, when you stop making decisions, that's what they want because now you've surrendered your power to them. Remember, at our fundamental core, this is a spiritual conflict, so it's all interconnected. When you're just throwing up your hands, you know, when I say, I point out a lot of times, you don't have any control over what the government's going to do. You know, you're not going to vote your way out of it. You're not going to influence them. You're going to, and people, I think, will oftentimes misinterpret that as a giving up mindset. What you're saying is just give up. Well, you're just saying there's nothing people could do when they could all go. Yeah, again, if your plan is if everyone would just, you don't have a plan because everyone is never going to just. You're just telling people to give up and not even try and just let them have their way. No, I'm saying abandon the things you have no control over because it's demoralizing. But you're not powerless. You have decisions you can make. You have decisions you need to be making. The demoralizing comes in, kicks in, and you quit making those decisions because you, well, it doesn't matter what I do. They're just going to make gas higher. They're just going to make groceries higher. I'm just going to get more broke. They're going to keep, you know, giving more money to Israel or giving more power to Palantir, whatever the hell. One of the purposes of this is to get you to surrender the things you do have power over. You make a personal decision about how to budget your money, where to send your kids, what to do in your home situation. You see, they don't have power over that and they can't stand it. They want to have that sort of power, but the only way they can have that power is for you to hand it to them. And when you sit around and just surrender and say, well, there's nothing I can do. Yeah, there is. I really recommend this if you have issues with your health care. As you know, I've been in two rounds on the cancer thing in my life. I hope I don't have any more, but you know how that is. And I have, for a long time, had the attitude to always make my own decisions. You know, don't just sit there, well, whatever you want to do, whatever you think's best, doc, you're the expert. I'll just go with that. That is the wrong attitude. Not saying that the doctor has ill intent, but the things he's suggesting may not be the right thing for you. He's just suggesting what he's read last, his latest instructions. This is what you need to tell people. And I'm sorry, it's the healthcare industry. More than likely, whatever they're going to recommend is going to be something very expensive because they're there to make money. Take control. Make your own decisions. You won't regret it. You may make a mistake. Your doctor may say, well, I recommend this treatment. You may say, yeah, I've thought about it. I'm not doing that. And later down the road, you may look back and go, yeah, I should have done that. He was right. You may make a mistake, but you had the power. You surrender that power and say, whatever you say, doc, and he recommends some bullshit expensive treatment that makes things worse. Now you're blaming him. See, it doubles down on the victim. Now you just, somebody else did something to me. Take your power back. Make your own decision. You may screw it up because you don't know. That's true. That's fine. Make your own decision because even if you screw it up, you can own it. You weren't, it might be a mistake. Yeah, it might. Or you may decide to go with what he decides, but make sure it's your decision and not his. Because even if it turns out bad, as somebody who's had a lot of things turn out bad in their life because of their own decisions, let me tell you, even if it turns out bad, you're at least not helpless. You're at least not powerless. If you make a bad decision in healthcare, for instance, okay, well, you can make another decision moving forward. You're not just helpless. When you surrender all your power to an authority figure, to somebody else, you're just going to see, well, what are they going to do to me next? And I hope they do something nice to me next because this system in this country is never going to do anything nice for you. It's not happening. Take your power back. Focus on the things you can do. Make the decisions you need to make. You can't do anything about the cost of living. The Federal Reserve, the government debt, how much they're going to send to Israel this week. You don't have power over that, but it doesn't mean you're powerless. And I'm telling you, you know you're not. Your decisions you make about your personal life is not going to change the world. You'd be shocked how much it'll change your life, your mindset. When you get rid of the victim, you're no longer sitting around, what are they going to do to me next? You're making your moves. Okay, they're going to do this. This is what I'm going to do to protect my life, to protect myself, to protect my family. You start doing that, and all of a sudden, now you're not just sitting around wondering, what's the next thing that's going to happen to me? See, that's helplessness. It makes you weak. And, you know, that makes you the victim. Makes you pliable. That gives them power over you that they don't really have. They can set the interest rates. They can run the fuel price up. They can do all sorts of crap to us. They do. And they have horrible plans for us, I'm sure. But handing your sovereignty over to them, you know, that sort of to absolutely, basically, spiritually surrender to them, just give up and just wait to see what they're going to do next. That has got to come from you. They don't have that power. It's up to you to give it to them. It's up to you to take it back. It's up to you to hold on to that. You're not powerless. Look at your life. Start making decisions. If you want to start, you know, stockpiling food, I mean, do that. It's fine. I mean, it doesn't matter if the next guy says, I don't think that's going to really do any good for whatever. Don't worry about it. Look, make your decision. You don't have to convince everybody else. Quit trying to convince everybody else. Take power of your own life. Make your decisions and then live with it. And if it's wrong, it's wrong. It's fine. You can make new decisions. This whole life is temporary. This is going to end. This whole life is temporary. This is the nature of this realm that we're bound to. It's the temporary, the temporal nature of it. Don't worry about it. It isn't going to change the world. Make your decisions. If you screw it up, make different decisions. Learn from it, make different decisions. That's the definition of repentance. Learn from your mistakes and don't do that again. You take that power. Don't surrender. That's what they want. They want you feeling helpless. They want you feeling powerless. You know? Again, focus on these things, whether it's healthcare and your life, all aspects of your life. Ask yourself all the time, what decisions do I need to make? If you start doing this, you will notice a difference. You'll notice a difference in how you feel. No matter how crappy decisions they make, you're no longer powerless. You're focusing on the things you can. Again, I never tell people give up. It's just the opposite. The opposite of giving up is doing something. And doing something means focusing on what you can do. Not some fantasy of if everyone will just. No, what you can actually do. That's how you get your power back. That's how you remain independent, regardless of their diktats. You know, they can put a man in prison and still not break him. It's about where you're at in your head. You know, in your spirit. If you surrender yourself to them or not. Or whether you decide to hold on to your sovereignty. Well, I wrap up on that note. I appreciate you stopping by. I hope you enjoyed this week's show. Hope you have a productive rest of your week. And of course, as always, I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.